2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, that music means it's time for another Jazz Notes podcast. I'm Cleon Wall. That's sweet, sweet music in this sweet, sweet time of year, which we're drawing closer and closer to the start of the regular season. No co-host today, because in this edition, we're going to go with 10 of the most interesting teams in the Western Conference again, where I ask a reporter five questions. And it's not going to be like I promised over 5 weeks, but hey, you know, whatever. I don't actually ask five questions either. It's more like around six or seven. But anyway, a bit of a bump in the road, excuse me. I was going to talk about the Sacramento Kings next, but instead we're going to talk about, well, the New Orleans Pelicans. That seems pretty apropos since the Jazz are going to be playing them here in the preseason. Zion Williamson, Derek Favors, and also Frank Jackson of Utah. We're going to be talking about those guys with Pelicans.com reporter Jim Eichenhofer. But before we get to that, I'm going to join a growing chorus of people who's really not too worried about the Jazz in their 133-99 loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. Ugly, yes. Concerning, no. Most of the bench guys played. You were missing two starters in Rudy Gobert and Joe Ingles. This is a long season. These guys need time to gel. This was game one. The starters didn't even play in the second half. I think they'll gel. I think they'll shoot better. I think this team is going to be just fine. Are there still concerns? Yes, when you play a guy like Giannis, it's really hard to guard him, and you saw that last night, and that was one of the things that Ben Anderson in a previous podcast had mentioned, one of the things that he wanted to see, and no, the Jazz did not handle him very well last night, but not a lot of teams do. You need a guy like a Kawhi Leonard, or maybe a guy like a LeBron James, or maybe guys who are on the Philadelphia 76ers who are tall, long, and athletic. Those guys will be able to handle Giannis. And when the Jazz were able to push him out on the perimeter like Jeff Green did a couple of times, by the way, go to kslsports.com, see my feature on Jeff Green. Check that out. When they were able to just keep him out on the perimeter and shoot from the perimeter, yeah, he kind of shot himself in the foot. Now, that doesn't sound like a good thing to say. He's just not as effective. He's so much more effective when he gets near the basket. And right now, I just don't know if the Jazz have one guy that can guard Giannis that well, and there are not too many guys that can guard Giannis that well. It also showed us last night the greatness of Rudy Gobert and how much he was missed or how much he could be missed if he misses any time. As I said, it's unfair with Giannis out there because he kind of just bowled over everyone. But it shows how good this defense can be when Rudy Gobert is on the floor. The last 15 games of the regular season last season, Jazz, they were number one in defensive rating. So that's what it means is that in points per 100 possessions, the Jazz gave up 103.7. That was their last 15 games last regular season. Last night, it was 117.7. So yeah, pretty ugly there. So you need a guy like Rudy Gobert. He really does anchor that defense, and he makes this team so much better on defense because of what the Jazz can do, either funneling people to Rudy or just being able to hopefully keep guys out on the perimeter or at the very least make them shoot floaters if they get in and around Rudy. It also shows you could say, the greatness of Derek Favors and how much he's going to be missed this next season. I'm not trying to rip on Ed Davis. I think you just need to give him a little time. But he's a lot skinnier than Derek Favors. And also, I'll have to say, Derek Favors played in Quinn Snyder's system for quite a few years, so I'm not going to judge Ed too harshly right now, but it shows how good Derek was on this team, with the Utah Jazz, and how well he played, and how much of a luxury it was to have him on this Jazz team. So it's going to be interesting when Rudy goes out of games. We're going to have to wait and see if Ed Davis can be that guy, or maybe the Jazz go a little smaller at times too. But that's going to be probably bad news, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I wanted to see in this game how the Jazz handled length. I'm going to say they struggled with it, except for Donovan Mitchell. He looked like, for the most part, he was more comfortable in this game against length, and he made a lot of good decisions. So I'm going to give credit to him, but the rest of the team, you could see that the Jazz kind of struggled when the Bucks put their big lineup out there. Ben Anderson on the last podcast, he was interested to see how Mike Conley would do on the floor. He was awful. He was 0 for 6. I don't think he had any assists. But Mike Conley, after the game, he's like, don't worry about it. We're going to come together. I'm not really too worried about it. I don't think Jazz fans should be worried about it either, even though he missed all of his shots. Ben was also interested to see how they would handle Giannis. You know how that turned out against dynamic power forwards. That's what Ben was talking about. Giannis this game, and coming into the next game, it's going to be Zion Williamson. Also, one more thing I wanted to cover or talk about is that Royce O'Neal struggled. We talked about him potentially being a starter for the Jazz, but he really struggled in that game. I'm not going to read a lot into it. Some guys just have bad games. Remember, Royce was the best player on the floor in the last game of the playoffs last year. Sometimes you have bad games. Sometimes you have good games. I still am not sure if Royce should start this season as one of the starters. I really think it should be Joe Ingles, but I don't think Royce is going to care. I think he just wants to get playing time. And I think the more playing time he gets, he's going to be just fine. He's going to shoot better, and he's going to provide you good defense. All right, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the 10 most interesting teams in the Western Conference. It happens to be who the Jazz are going to play on Friday night. And so we're going to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans with Jim Eichenhofer next, right here on the Jazz Notes Podcast.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
All right, welcome back into the Jazz Notes Podcast. It's now time for 10 of the most interesting teams in the Western Conference, where I ask a reporter five questions. It's actually more like six. And today we're talking to Pelicans.com writer Jim Eichenhofer. And my first question to him dealt with a former Jazz man. Well, we've got to talk about Derek Favors first and foremost. I mean, he played up in Utah for all those years. We loved working with him. I think he loved being here. He's now in New Orleans. How has it been working with him, and how is he adjusting to being with the Pelicans?
He seems like a great guy. I mean, I haven't had a ton of interaction with him yet. I mean, there's 20 guys on this team right now, and about 14 or 15 of them, 15 of them are brand new. But he seems like a guy that everyone really respects. And I think one of the first great impressions I got of him was actually when the trade happened in July, where he came from Utah to here, just seeing the social media reaction from Salt Lake City and seeing all of the people, including some of the writers there, talk about how much they're going to miss him and how much respect they had for him as far as the way he carried himself there, how much of a pro he was, and how genuine of a person he seems to be. So I think when I heard all of that stuff, it was a pretty long list. I was even more excited. I knew a lot about how good of a player he's been. I mean, I've seen the Pelicans play against him the entire time I've been with the team. But to hear all that stuff about what he does off the court and what kind of person and character he has, that made me even more excited about the acquisition of being able to get somebody like him.
A quick follow-up to you. I know you guys have only played a couple of games so far. He's now what I would term the starting center for your team. Does he seem fairly comfortable being that starting center? Because he was playing power forward here, but in reality, he was the starting power forward backup center. Is he kind of embraced that role and he's loving that role right now?
Yeah, in fact, I think that was one of the things that was attractive to him about coming to New Orleans on this roster, was that they talked to him about how they wanted him to play center. I did talk to him on media day, and he spoke about how the way the NBA has evolved into where there's a lot more small lineups, and I think he thinks he's a better fit at center. He could be more effective. I know one of the things that was a part of the equation when he was in Utah was his role wasn't huge. I know he started a lot of games, but one thing that was curious to me was his minutes per game was pretty low for a guy that started as much as he did last year. And I know he wasn't necessarily a huge focal point of the offense always, but I think here he sees that his role is going to be really expanded. And there's a lot of talent on this roster, but a lot of it's young. So I think just having someone proven the way Favors is, both on and off the court, is something that the Pelicans looked at when they were thinking about acquiring him and thought, you know, man, he can be good for this team in a lot of different ways.
Coach Alvin Gentry, he's come out and he's, from what I've understood, he's wanted to tamp down the Zion Williamson hype train. But then, you know, in the game Wednesday night, he goes 12 for 13, 29 points in 27 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, how is the coach going to be able to accomplish this goal when he's the type of specimen he is and he's having games like this?
Yeah, I think even Alvin Gentry and everyone in the organization that's talked about their intentions are to reduce expectations and keep things reasonable in terms of what you are demanding of a 19-year-old. Even they, I think, understand that there are going to be some things that are out of their control as far as what the, you know, the national media perspective is, how much hype there is about him, the fact that he's going to be on all of the highlight shows constantly. I mean, we can tell from two preseason games that that's going to be the case. He had probably four or five dunks against the Bulls last night that were worthy of being on the top 10 plays or whatever. So I think they're just realistic. They know that I think it's more the kind of thing where it's like everything that they can control, they're going to do everything they can to rein in things and not have it spiral out of control. But I think everyone realistically knows who's been around the NBA and has seen the media attention for some of the top rookies that come into the league. We know that there's really only so much you can do, I think, on that front.
Yeah, you go on ESPN.com, you click on their page, and the first, like, four or five videos, it's either Zion highlights or they're talking about Zion and what kind of player he can become. This is a team that a lot of national media types, too, have also come out and said, we really like this Pelicans roster. We think they could possibly make the playoffs. Now, we talked about tamping down the Zion hype train. I'm assuming that Alvin isn't tamping down the, we're a good team and we could possibly make the playoffs hype train when it comes to talking about his team, or at least talking to the media about his team.
You know, it's an interesting question, because I would say that there's kind of two categories. The players definitely have been very publicly not hesitant at all to say our goal is to make the playoffs this year. That's what we want to do. Whereas I think the coaches and maybe front office have had more of a perspective of, you know, we want to be as competitive as possible, but we're not saying that if we don't make the playoffs this year, it's a disappointment or that kind of thing. David Griffin, who's basically, you know, in charge of the front office now, he's the vice president of basketball operations. He basically has said, we don't really know what this team is going to be able to do this season. And I think that's kind of the right way to look at it. That's kind of the way I look at it as well. And in some ways, it's kind of a relief to not have the pressure of saying, okay, this team has to win this many games. Because, as you know, in the past few years, there was always the thing in the background of, like, okay, they have to appease the best player on the team because he's going to become a free agent eventually and he might want to leave. So I actually kind of, I enjoy this, the perspective now of saying, like, we don't know what we have with this talent. There's so many new players, and there's also, I think, another thing that makes it really hard to predict is you have so many guys that are in, say, their second, third, fourth year where they haven't really reached their max. They still have room to improve. So when you add all that up together, to me, it's hard to really give a good prediction or say exactly what you think. I mean, I would like to think that they will make the playoffs and that they'll be competitive for that, but really, who knows? And at the same time, it's like, to me, of course you want to do as well as you can and you want to see win as many games as possible, but it's not necessarily to me about just the season when you have so many young guys. It's about, you know, down the road, what can you build in terms of a team that can compete for a championship? Because ultimately that's what everyone wants to do.
You know, the past few years, it was really easy to say, here's the guy, and that was Anthony Davis. If late in a game you had to give the ball to someone, you would probably give it to Anthony Davis. Is that guy now Jrue Holiday? I think a lot of people who watch a lot of basketball appreciates what he can do for a team. Is Jrue Holiday now the leader and the go-to guy, at least for right now, for the Pelicans?
He's definitely the leader off the court and in the locker room, and just based on his credentials as far as what he's done in his career is really beyond anyone else that's in the locker room. In terms of on the court, specific to end-of-game situations, I think the Pelicans kind of want to get away from the idea of that it's going to be on one guy the way it was before. And I think it's going to depend a little bit on the situation. I think there will be cases where Jrue Holiday has the ball in his hands at the end of the game. But one of the players that the Pelicans acquired from the Lakers that I think they have really high hopes as far as his ability to create his own shot and be able to make plays in situations at the end of games is Brandon Ingram, who's 6'9", really long, you know, can shoot mid-range, can really get his shot off against anybody. So I think it's going to be kind of a group effort as far as who gets the ball at the end of games. I mean, there might be situations as well where Zion is the guy that they want to get the ball to. We've already seen just from these couple preseason games that when he catches the ball on the move and wants to get to the basket, it's so hard to keep him away from the rim. So I think they're optimistic that they're going to have a lot of options as far as that goes, but Jrue is definitely the leader in a lot of different ways, you know, when it comes to the intangibles and, you know, a bunch of different categories that come from the fact that he has done so much in the NBA so far in his career.
One of the guards that is on the Pelicans roster right now, and you just mentioned that there are 20 guys on this roster, but one of them does have some Utah ties, and that's Frank Jackson, went to high school out here. And there are lots of people out here who are still curious about him, want to see how he develops in the NBA. Is he going to lose a little bit of that development? Because you've got a lot of guards on this team. You got Lonzo, you got Josh Hart, you got Nikhil Walker-Alexander, you got J.J. Redick, you got Etwan Moore. Is he going to lose a little bit of that development, or does he have a defined role with this team that they really like him, being one of the backup point guards or just backup combo guards for this team?
I think that's a really good question, and it's also one that you could apply to several of the guards that they have. You mentioned Josh Hart. There's also Nikhil Alexander Walker, who's looked really good so far and had a great summer league. To answer your question, I don't know. I think that's something that they're going to determine during they still have three more preseason games and obviously a bunch more practices during the preseason part of the schedule before they start the season October 22nd against Toronto. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that the coaches have is they have so many guards, like you said, who fans are going to say, and I'm probably going to say, man, this guy deserves to be on the court, but I don't know how you can play everyone. So they're going to have to make a determination. They probably have, depending on how you describe guys positionally, they probably have 6 or 7 guards that I think are legitimately rotation guys in the NBA. I don't know how you can play more than 4, at the max 5, if you can get a 5th guard in there that can maybe make cameos here or there, so to speak. So I think it's going to be, it's just up to Frank and the other guards. They're going to have to fight it out and figure out who deserves the minutes the most. And I think some of it might also come down to fit as far as do they need a ball handling? Do they need a guy that can shoot threes? You know, also depending on what other lineups they have. So it's a really complicated situation right now, but it's definitely a good problem to have more talent than you have spots in the rotation, then to have to try to Band-Aid and duct tape a rotation together with guys that you're not confident in.
Jim, I've already gone past my five questions, but I do have kind of like a follow-up question or a question I wanted to ask you last of all here. How does this team match up right now with the Utah Jazz? I'm, of course, going to look forward to seeing how Gobert and Favors match up with one another, but how do you think overall this team matches up right now with the Utah Jazz, especially with so many young guys on this roster?
Yeah, you know, I think Utah is probably one of the most interesting matchups to me in the NBA for the Pelicans to see how they're going to do, because I know it's, like you said, it's just a preseason game tomorrow, and we're not going to read too much into it, but Utah has been one of the slower-paced teams in the league the last bunch of years. They've also been one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they've had their way against the Pelicans a lot over the last few years. I think their style of play has really been a negative towards New Orleans in the head-to-head matchups. Donovan Mitchell has been a huge problem for the Pelicans as well, but also Rudy Gobert. I mean, Anthony Davis had a lot of games where he struggled against Utah, and I think a lot of that was because of Gobert, just his defensive presence, and also Favors as well. The Pelicans had really struggled for a while against teams that are physical defensively the way Utah is. So I think Friday night's game, we'll get a little glimpse of this maybe, but definitely more so during the regular season. It's going to be really fascinating to see, you know, the Pelicans have so many young guys that are trying to see them get as much of their potential out of them as they can, whereas Utah has so many established players like Mike Conley and Bogdanovich, just great pickups that they made this summer. So I think it'll be a really good test for New Orleans as far as just measuring themselves against one of the teams that I think is going to be really dangerous at the top of the West, and also a team that just has so much savvy. It's kind of an interesting contrast in terms of these two rosters are just totally different in terms of the way that they're comprised right now.
All right. Thanks a lot to Jim Eichenhofer again for joining us. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up with him when he comes to Salt Lake City. Anyway, Jazz fans, enjoy the Zion experience. We'll have to see how Boyan handles him and maybe some of the other forwards too. And by the time we podcast to you again, the Jazz will probably have played the Sacramento Kings too. So that'll be interesting. So hopefully we'll talk more about Sacramento, about how the Jazz handled these past two teams and how they could be gelling. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Enjoy the games. Thanks for downloading, listening, and subscribing. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.